is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, tell your friends to subscribe. Check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well for your favorite NBA or NFL team. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls. And if you want to advertise with us or have questions you want us to answer on the show, make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Cody, it's been pretty quiet with the Bulls. Still no deal with Nico.
That is true. As free agency winds into its fifth day, the evening of the fifth day here, as we record, all is quiet on the Nico front. And that's on from every possible angle, whether it's Nico's, the Bulls, other interests throughout the NBA. Not much movement there. Sean, our team's running out of money for Nico. Like, should we have expected something by now? Because we know the Bulls want to bring him back. We know he said he wants to come back to Chicago. But I expected a little bit more flurry of at least rumors around him by this point.
Well, this is just kind of what we're seeing with everybody. And, I mean, this summer so far has been, like, the opposite of last summer. Because, like, last summer you saw, like, everybody had cap space because of the huge spike because of the TV deal with the salary cap. So you immediately saw, like, Timofey Mozgov got that huge deal with the Lakers. Joakim Noah got that huge deal with the Knicks. You see other deals that were signed, like, pretty quickly last summer. They just kind of made you go, wait, that guy got that much money?
Yeah.
This year, not as many teams have that kind of cap space, and everybody is kind of, like, honestly, like, the first, what are we on? Today's July 5th, so it's been 5 days of free agency. Honestly, like, there are no deals that have been signed so far where I just look at them and go, what is that guy thinking? And so nobody has signed. I think part of it is just teams don't have a lot of cap space.
Yeah.
But teams also are just kind of seeing, like, the consequences of last summer's spending spree. Like, the Lakers already had to give away D'Angelo Russell to get off of that Mozgov deal. And so teams are a little bit more hesitant to throw money at guys. And so, you know, it's not just Nico. As far as restricted guys, Otto Porter is getting his max from the Nets, and we think Washington is going to match that. But, like, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has no offers yet that we know of. Nerlens Noel has no deals that we know of. Bojan Bogdanovic has no deals that we know of.
I think there's a couple of things here, a couple points to make. The late-in-the-game salary cap reduction from the expected $101 million to $99
million.
To outsiders, it might not seem like a huge thing, but it's yet another little mark on the ledger for being careful for NBA teams, and we'll get into this in a little bit, but that, for example, is forcing the Boston Celtics to shop at least a player, shop three players, and trade one of them probably that they weren't expecting to because of that reduction. And that's just $2 million more dollars that teams don't have to throw around this year that you might have started an annual salary at a little higher than you would there. So the other thing is, I'm impressed with how the general managers of the NBA have, I guess, backtracked or learned so quickly from last year. You know what I mean? And I guess that was to be expected. But I know, and this is like kind of part of the Bulls' plan too, is it's kind of coming to fruition a little bit here, but also I think the Bulls would love to see every team in the NBA spend just ungodly, awful financial decisions, you know what I mean? So they can be positioned in summer 2018, summer 2019 to add young free agents, guys that can really make a difference moving forward in this rebuild or absorb bad contracts. And I do think the Bulls a little bit have, I mean, I guess... I don't know vindicated, per se, but they correctly are guessing that the market is already scaling back and teams aren't going to have as much money as you thought. You know what I mean? Because we're already seeing it in this free agency period from last year bleeding into this year. And still, with just the number of free agents out there that teams still sign. So the Bulls certainly are banking on having that financial freedom a year from now or being able to take some of those bad contracts that teams have signed previously or still could sign. But NBA general managers and executives have done a pretty good job, like you said, of smart contracts. Like, I think Otto Porter, to the uninitiated fans, going to be like, how does he get $106 million or so in his offer? Like, people are just going to be astounded. But, like, he is the modern 3-and-D guy, shot, like, over 40% on three-pointers, fits in really well to that team. And I know that's a big number. I know Drew Holiday's big number to go back to New Orleans is big. But, hey, like, they were capped out. Basically, they had to keep their own guys. They couldn't go out in the market. So, I guess it's playing out, you know, just a little bit more conservatively as we go along here. And as it pertains to Nico, like, what's this mean, I guess, is a question. Probably less money for Nico than Nico originally expected on day one of free agency is the way I read it.
I think Nico and his agent probably thought they were going to be able to go out and get, like, a $20 million a year offer sheet from some team, and then the Bulls would have had to make a decision on whether they were going to match it or not. And the Bulls, I mean, the Bulls are kind of in the position now where they can make, I don't know what the money is that they're offering Nico or what the years are or what exactly the contract is that they're offering. I've tried to find out information about that. I haven't been able to get anywhere really with that. Everybody's kind of keeping it quiet for now. But, like, Bulls are in the spot now where they can just say, here's our offer. If you want to find another better offer, feel free. And then there just aren't really better offers out there.
The Bulls, anytime you're in restricted free agency, the team has the leverage in most every case, unless there's something really wonky going on. And the Bulls have all the leverage here. I mean, the Bulls can sit on their deck and drink beers if they want to for the next 3 days and just see what happens. You know what I mean? They can celebrate the fourth and whatever happens, we'll see what other teams offer Nico. Here's our deal. Take it or leave it. We'll string you along if we need to. So, like, it's the Bulls bargaining from a position of power. And it makes sense for them to bargain from a position of power because, hey, they're doing a rebuild. They don't want bad long-term contracts. And Nico hasn't been consistent enough in the past three seasons to warrant a big deal just from the Bulls' good graces. You know what I mean? So, $20 million we bandied about. I think $18 million we'd bandied about before maybe a higher end if there's no crazy deal. Like,
I don't
sub
think
15
getting,
for Nico now for sure. Are we looking at $12 million per, maybe?
12, 13, 14, somewhere in there. I do think ultimately they're going to get a deal done eventually. It might stretch out later into July before it actually gets done, but I think Nico will be back.
Are we looking at, I mean, do you think 3 years makes sense? Do you think they'll bring him, he's 26, going on 27 next season. Do you think 3 years makes the most sense? Does 4 years make more sense? Is that pretty much what you think? I don't see Nico ever wanting to go here for a two-year contract or a short-term deal unless he really thinks the Bulls are underpaying him big time and he can be a star next year and throw up 20 points per game on a bad team and they get a more lucrative deal next year. But I think 3 or 4 makes the most sense.
I think that might be the kind of thing where it would be like a compromise. I think the Bulls would probably like to get him for 3 years. Nico, I'm sure, wants 4 years because of the security. Maybe they can do some kind of compromise where either he gets a 3-year deal with a slightly higher annual salary or he gets a slightly lower annual salary, but he gets a 4-year deal or like a 4th-year player option or something like that.
What I'm saying is you don't see a J.J. Redick deal here where the Bulls sign him for a year or him signing with a team for a year and going back into free agency.
No, I don't. I mean, maybe down the line, if they still don't have a deal by, like, August or September, he'll just sign the one-year qualifying offer and maybe bet on himself, which, I mean, that might be the best thing for all parties at this point because, you know, the Bulls get Nico for a cheap deal for next year. He gets to actually prove what he is, and, you know, either he gets paid or he doesn't.
So now you're advocating that could be a good path for Nico, though.
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to get a deal done at some
point. Yeah, I think Nico should... Look, he said again and again he likes Chicago. No one in the first 5 days of free agency came banging on his door, so no one loved him so much that he was going to be a huge part of their plans or this key piece on a playoff team or help them to championship contention by being a really good sixth man or seventh man off the bench. You know what I'm saying? So, like, again, he has a small child here, or young child, I should say, in Chicago. His wife likes it here. He likes it here. And look, the Bulls respect his work ethic and all the effort he puts in, save for the time he missed a shoot-around.
He walked through.
By the time the Bulls season was spiraling out of control and they had a randomly scheduled 4:15 shoot-around before like a 7 p.m. game, we're gonna waive that from Nico's record, right?
I think, I mean, and that is an important point, is that without, you know, as much as Nico was inconsistent, and that was frustrating for a lot of people in the organization, you could never say, oh, Nico wasn't working hard enough, or Nico wasn't trying to get
good
better.
Good teammate, too. You know
good
what
teammate,
I mean?
His teammates like him, he's
his
a good guy.
His teammates get frustrated that Nico gets too hard on himself specifically too hard on himself mentally sometimes. They wish he would toughen up, I think, at times, but they do not ever fault the effort and the type of guy he is. You know what I mean?
No.
So that means something, too. Amid a rebuild, again, the Bulls want guys like that that are going to come in the organization and help set the right way for these young guys. Wanted to let you know, our episode is brought to you by SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be really complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek, which is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets anywhere, anytime, just a couple clicks. SeatGeek helps find you the best seats at the best prices, and it's fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician or show up close and in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have a SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I found to shop for tickets. You can be anywhere, anytime, with a few clicks. You can instantly find seats. What, we used SeatGeek a couple weeks ago, U2 concert, right?
Yeah.
It was really easy. Just a couple clicks. Sometimes we have Sean run the electronics on this and do the tech work and make sure that my phone, obviously, has the SeatGeek app as well. And then we just scan it when we walk up there.
I use SeatGeek
to your friends.
I used SeatGeek a week ago to get tickets for a Tom Petty concert also. It was great.
And you didn't even get rained on the whole time, right?
Just during Chris Stapleton, the opener.
Just during Chris Stapleton, and then the skies cleared up for Tom Petty. But SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. You save time and money by searching multiple ticket sites with SeatGeek that price compares to find amazing deals. You also get the most bang for your buck. SeatGeek grades every single ticket based on value, and you identify the best seats to fit your budget. Plus, every purchase fully guaranteed, so shop with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket. Here's what we need our Locked On Bulls listeners to do, and we need you to listen closely. Change in the promo code. We've gone national, basically, is the best way to put it. So now you need to use promo code LONBA to get your SeatGeek rebate of $20 off your first purchase. Promo code LONBA and SeatGeek will save you money. Derrick Rose, interviewing with the Clippers, hanging out with Clippers management, talking to his boys in L.A. What's going on, Sean, with the Derrick Rose free agency situation?
So Woj reported yesterday that Derrick Rose was going to meet with the Clippers, and assuming that happened today, I haven't heard anything about how it went, but that's actually one of the few places where I don't think that's a terrible fit. I don't think he would start at point guard over Patrick Beverley, but that's a situation where, especially because like they just traded Jamal Crawford to the Hawks in this three-team sign-and-trade deal with where they're getting Danilo Gallinari, and then they also lost J.J. Redick in free agency. They need some scoring off the bench, so he could be a guy, you know, if he's willing to be a sixth man, he could come in. He fits the mold of guys that Doc Rivers played against in the Eastern Conference playoffs 8 years ago, so like I understand that. I think they'd be able to get him. They're hard capped to about $10 million above where they are now because of the sign and trade that they did, but they still have their full $8 million mid-level, so they could actually give him a little bit more money. So I actually don't think that's a terrible
thing. How's he going to be the sixth man if Austin Rivers is still on the team? Or is Austin going to be inserted in the starting lineup?
Well, so who's going to start? It's probably going to be
Beverly, Lou Williams, Gallinari now?
I think Lou Williams will probably come off the bench.
So he'd be the sixth man then.
Okay, so fine. Derrick would be the seventh man, but you know, he'd be the backup, and then Gallinari, Griffin, and DeAndre.
Lou Williams is their most logical shooting guard right now, I think, just browsing their roster real quick. The point stands, Derrick could be kind of a facilitator and handler.
He's an upgrade over Raymond Felton.
He's a big upgrade over Raymond Felton, I would say. I don't know how big, but he's certainly an upgrade.
He's an upgrade.
He's a clear upgrade. Over Raymond
Felton. I know Derrick Rose is not the player he was before the injuries, but we are not to the point where he's a worse basketball player than Raymond Felton. I'm sorry.
And Derrick has often resided and spent his off seasons in L.A., of course, through the years. So that kind of hints just another part of this that could make some sense. And when you look at it at this point, like, hey, I don't get the sense that Derrick Rose wants to go into, and I don't mean there's no NBA city that's pure obscurity, but I don't see him going to an Oklahoma City.
Orlando or
backup,
something like
that. Or in Orlando, exactly, and being a backup. Like, I still think it would make more sense. He'd like to be in a bigger market on a team that has a chance to make the playoffs. Certainly, Derrick thought the Knicks were a super team last year. They were not, But when he went there, I think in his head he thought they were going to be a playoff team, obviously, based on his comments. And look, they had the talent, if they weren't such a train wreck on multiple levels, to do that probably. But you're saying that makes sense. I don't see anywhere else, like you said, that makes more sense, because we've gone through this in recent weeks and we didn't find a whole lot that made sense. And I think that was before the Chris Paul trade. One aspect of this, should we run back Derrick Rose and Pat Beverly's relationship? It has been at times one of respect and also contentiousness, though. They go really hard at each other, really hard, because they're both Chicago products. Does that factor into it at all if you're the Clippers?
I think Patrick Beverley is like the quintessential type of player where you hate him if he's on the other team, but you love him if he's on your team. I think Derek would be okay with him being on his team.
Yeah, it's not like a Patrick Beverley, Russell Westbrook situation where he cost Russ like a year and a knee surgery. Not a year, but certainly cost him a playoff postseason by kind of what Westbrook viewed as undercutting him when
right.
he was just trying to call a timeout. A lot of bad blood there. Derek and Pat have always, every single time we've asked both of them about it, have indicated that they have a respect, but at the same time, like, I mean, Beverly used to go maybe harder than anyone out there felt like when he faced Derrick Rose. You know what I mean? Like, he'd pick him up three quarters court and just dog him up and down the court sometimes in those Bulls-Rockets matchups. So I think that would just be, I think it's worth noting, you know what I'm saying?
Well, those are both guys that also have just, like, had a big chip on their shoulders over the last few years, because Derek wanted to prove that he could be the same guy after the injury that Patrick Beverley. If you look at the path he took to even get to the NBA, he was a second-round pick, rather, and he, you know, couldn't get on a team right away, played overseas, played in the D-League before he finally caught on with Houston. So they both are really, really competitive guys.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think them being on the same team wouldn't be a problem at all.
Before we get to your questions, I mean, I feel like we buried the lead here, Sean. The Bulls, you're about to fly to Vegas on Thursday evening.
That's true.
If I'm correct.
I am.
To see the defending Summer League champion, Chicago Bulls, try to defend said title there. And the Bulls officially released their Summer League roster on Wednesday evening. And it's a doozy. And by that, I mean, it's stacked, because the Bulls are rebuilding and they actually have two guys on their summer league team that might start opening night for them on the real floor against real teams in the real 82-game season. The summer league roster, highlighted by Chris Dunn, obviously they just acquired from the Timberwolves. Paul Zipser, your boy, Paul Zipser.
He didn't play in summer league last year because he was with the national team, but he's going to be there this year.
Correct. Both those guys, second-year guys. Denzel Valentine, another second-year guy.
Summer league champion, Denzel Valentine.
Did you retweet your tweet from last year about his comment, or did someone else do that today?
I don't believe. I am very adamantly against retweeting your own tweets.
Someone was replying to that comment then, where he said the only people who don't understand.
The only people who think Summer League doesn't matter
are those who haven't won a Summer League title.
Yes.
The all-time quote. Someone brought that back up. So he, of course, will be there. Lauri Markkanen, the Bulls' number 7 overall pick in the draft that they acquired in the Tom Thibodeau Timberwolves trade as well. And then the other big name, of course, Cameron Payne. Third-year guy, a little not surprised that Cameron Payne's there, but certainly symbolic and reflective of where his NBA career has taken him so far, in being extremely underwhelming, bad for the Bulls in his couple-month stretch with them last year, and the need, as the Bulls said, to just work out more and get his game going this summer. What'd you read into that, I guess?
It is kind of unusual to see third-year guys play Summer League, but you can't really say that Cameron Payne doesn't need Summer League. He hasn't played much because of the foot stuff and because of him being bad when he did play last year. John Paxson said that they wanted him to be in better shape. So, you know, he needs to be playing in competition in the summer to be in better shape. It'll be good for him. And, I mean, I think we'll find out. Summer League is always kind of complicated in terms of, like, assessing how guys look. Like, you have to look for different things. You can't just say, oh, this guy had this many points and this many rebounds in Summer League, and because that's not going to translate, because these are basically glorified scrimmages. I've gone to Summer League the last 5 years now. This will be my sixth time going. And there have been some guys, like I remember my first year that I went, the two co-MVPs of Summer League were Damian Lillard and Josh Selby.
Oh.
And I remember I was watching Damian Lillard. And
different trajectories.
Well, right, but it was like Lillard's summer league that year was one of those ones where, like, it wasn't what his stats were, but you just looked at him and you just saw, okay, this guy looks like he just belongs out there on the floor. He's making smart decisions. He's making the right passes. The shots he's taking are good shots. Like, he's a guy you could look at summer league and you can just tell, like, he's going to be a good NBA player. And then Josh Selby kind of was just like, he scored a ton of points every game at summer league because he was basically just, like, playing against sub-NBA competition. And then he ended up not really having a good NBA career. Like, I remember, like, Kristaps Porzingis before his rookie year. I watched him, and I didn't really know anything about him because I don't really watch a lot of international basketball, and I know a lot of Knicks fans were mad about that pick because they are just, like, skeptical of any European player they drafted. But I watched Porzingis, and I was just like, okay, this is a smart guy. He knows how to... He's going to be able to translate to the NBA game. And it's going to be really interesting now to watch Lauri Markkanen, who we've never seen play against NBA competition before. And
you want to see him dominate.
You want to see... Well, it's not even that you want to see him dominate. You just want to see him not look like he doesn't belong, because it's not necessary.
Setting the bar really low for defending champs.
But this is Summer League. This is how you evaluate guys at Summer League. I mean, I get... Yeah, people are invested in them winning the Summer League.
I want them to dominate.
Well, great. I mean, okay, if they dominate, great. But, like, the thing with Summer League is... It's not necessarily a good sign if a player looks really good at Summer League, because you don't know if that's going to translate, but it definitely is a bad sign if a player doesn't look good at Summer League.
That's an excellent point. So 22-8 per game from Chris Dunn. I want 15-10 from Paul Zipser. I want 21-7 from Lowry Marketing. Too much to ask?
No?
Maybe too much to ask.
Maybe too much to ask, but...
Probably because they're not going to get quite enough playing time to actually amass those numbers. Brady Heslip, a guard from Baylor, and Ryan Archidiakono, a guard from Villanova, I think are the two names that might be most familiar for the random additions to the Bulls Summer League team. So I feel like the Bulls are going to have plenty of guard play and outside shooting and ability... when fixing to Summer League standards, I guess you would say, in this sense. No Bobby Portis this year, though.
No.
Which is, he was a rock down low. You know what I mean? Like, that was big. So, I'm just saying, back-to-back or no? How you feeling here? Is there any reason the Bulls shouldn't win the Summer League if they're actually going to have two guys starting in Summer League that might start on opening night?
I mean, they think clearly that means they should win.
Are the Bulls building a Summer League dynasty? Just wait for those string of 8 episodes later this month.
Will they be the first team ever to hang 2 banners at Thomas and Mack?
Oh, no one's ever won 2?
No.
Oh,
because they've only done the Summer League championship. They've only made it an actual tournament since like 2013 or 14.
Yeah.
And so it's like the Warriors won, the Kings won, the Spurs won, and then the Bulls won. So I think I'm pretty sure like there's really haven't been any Summer League dynasties so far.
Chris Walker from Florida, another name you might know. The rest of the guys, you could have told me like. Real basketball player or made-up name of a businessman in Europe or elsewhere or anywhere. And I probably wouldn't have had a clue. Nikola Jovanovic from USC. Never heard of him. But hey, never know how well he could play. Dejan Todorovic as well from Spain. So just saying, like, names to watch in Bulls Summer League, like, guys we've never heard of, but could be big difference makers if the Bulls want
to
repeat.
And it's actually interesting because you have to actually keep an eye on some of these other guys who aren't already on the Bulls roster this year because of the addition of the two-way contracts where teams, you know, can sign a guy and have him on the roster for a level below the minimum, but like he spends most of the time in the G League. I have to say G League now because it's the G League.
Certainly.
But like, you know, there's a chance if one of these other guys on the team ends up impressing at Summer League, they'll sign him to a two-way contract. They get two of those spots. And, I mean, you never know. I mean, Cristiano Felicio just got paid by the Bulls, and he was a Summer League just other roster filler guy that they liked, and they ended
That's
up giving him a
campaign
probably
the most important part coming out of it, like you said, the two-way contracts that are new under the CBA, who the Bulls might use, because, I mean, Summer League's the perfect way to use that and just create some continuity. So, I mean, do you want to take early MVP bets already for the Bulls Summer League when they win the title?
I think we're going to have a Summer League MVP on a losing team.
Chris Dunn?
No. Oh. I think it's going to be Lonzo Ball. Bulls are going to beat the Lakers in the...
Bulls over Lakers in the final. Lonzo Ball is Summer League MVP.
That's my pick.
I got... how many teams are there? Like 24?
24.
20? Okay.
Because there's some that play at Orlando, some that play at Utah.
Yeah, the Wolves aren't going to run it back again this year. Like, they're not going to make the championship because I feel like they're progressing to, like, actually contending for playoffs.
Well, and Justin Patton broke his foot.
Can I go... Yeah, that's true, too. Can I go, like, Bulls over Suns? Are the Suns there?
Yeah, the Suns are there.
I think the Suns are there. I'm going to... The Suns always have lots of good young players and, like, guys that need to play. Bulls over Suns in the title. Chris Dunn, Summer League MVP.
My boy Mike James on the Suns team. Not the Mike James that has played for the Bulls in the past. There's a different Mike James who's played in Europe who I went to high school with, and he's on the Suns Summer League team.
Really?
Yeah.
You're going to run into him there?
I'm going to.
Do a story?
Going to try. We'll see.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool. You could do a story for your hometown newspaper or something.
Yeah, I'll try.
That'd be awesome.
We'll see.
Let the Locked On Bulls listeners know how that goes as well. We'll get to a few of your questions here. Superfan 591 on Twitter asks, what are your guesses on the opening night starting lineup for the Bulls? Sean, you want to go first?
So we don't think that LaVine is going to be available opening night.
That's your guess.
My guess is that LaVine is not going to be available opening night. So I think it's going to be Dunn at point guard, Wade at the two, Zipser at the three, Mirotić at the four, assuming they bring him back, and then Robin Lopez at the five.
Can I go same five except... I'm going to put Bobby Portis opening night starting lineup at power forward.
I think if Nico gets a eight-figure-a-year contract, he's going to be the opening night starter.
That would make all the sense in the world. I still think Nico's coming back to the Bulls. I just think everything is so weird right now. And it'll probably be a training camp battle, too. And I wouldn't be shocked for anything to happen. We really thought when Nico... didn't play two games in March entirely by coach's decision and had also been shopped ahead of the February trade deadline.
And was inactive in favor of Isaiah Cannon.
Yes. We really thought that meant he was out of town. And now he's like a priority for him. So I'm just saying anything is possible. I'm going to throw Bobby Portis in there for the fun of it because I think it might happen. And like I said, I think the Bulls are going to have like 10 or 12 different guys start at some point in this coming season, yeah. Certainly.
And that's okay this time because they're not trying to make the playoffs. They're just trying to develop these young guys. So if he wants to mess around with different lineups, it's fine.
Joey on Twitter. I think Chris Dunn is horrible. Do you think Chris Dunn is not horrible? Excuse me, he used the word terrible, but the point remains.
I think it's too early to say.
I will say this, Joey. Chris Dunn had a terrible offensive season. As a rookie, there is no getting around that.
Which he admitted himself in their press conference introducing him. He said, yeah, I accept I had a bad year last year. But a lot of rookies, and I mean, if you go back and listen to the podcast that I did last week with John Krasinski from the AP, who covers the Timberwolves a lot, he really believes that Chris Dunn is not going to be as bad as he was last year and that he just was in a bad situation last year. It's harder for rookies to play under Thibodeau.
Look... rookies often, there's so much, like, rookies crash onto the scene. And then a lot of times people will be like, oh, sophomore slump's coming. You know what I mean? Like, that happens in sports across all of them, NBA included at times. But I think sometimes people forget progression and development and improvement as a player just as often as it's weird with, like, a breakout star and then regressing a little bit. A lot of times it is a little more linear where you do look lost for some long stretches when you're young and a little more experience, you get a little better. Like, I would expect Chris Dunn to be better next year. He'll be in a situation that is probably less stressful, a lot less stressful, not trying to win immediately, not quite as high of expectations, though, given the Bulls' affinity and love for him over the past, since, what, May 2016?
Yeah.
I guess they've just kind of indirectly thrown a lot of expectations on him, you know what I mean? Because they have liked him so much, but like, he's not going to be getting yelled at by Tom Thibodeau on every single breakdown on a coach that is often, I don't know, just not apt to play rookies a lot. You know what I'm saying? So I think he'll be better. I'm not, jury's out a lot. We can just say what was last year, and that was a bad year. As Chris Dunn pointed out, I would expect him to be better. The question, my worry is I don't know if he's a frontline starter. You know, like, I don't know if that is your starting point guard that's going to help lead you to the Eastern Conference Finals in 5 or 6 years from now. That's my concern. But better, yeah. Better than worse, terrible that he was last year, certainly I would expect that. Do you think the Bulls will take on a bad contract for a pick? Asks Mason on Twitter. And a reminder that they'll have until June 23rd or 4th next year to do that with the Jimmy Butler trade exception. What do you think, Sean?
I mean, I think that's certainly something they'd look at, and I think that I would expect, like, assuming they re-sign Nico, they'll have 13 roster spots filled. I think they'll sign one more guy, and then I think they're going to keep an open roster spot just in case an opportunity like that presents itself. I have no idea if they have anybody in mind or anything. But now, as far as salary dumps go, we should probably talk about something else, which is that the Celtics have been, because they just got Gordon Hayward yesterday. That's the biggest free agent acquisition of the offseason. But they don't have max cap space, so they have to dump either Jay Crowder or Avery Bradley or Marcus Smart in order to create that cap space. So they've been shopping those guys around to some teams. I think it's kind of funny that those guys were once seen as untouchable in trades for like Paul George or Jimmy Butler, and now they're trying to just unload them.
Yeah. What do you expect the Celtics to get back when unloading these guys?
I think if
these are good basketball players. Like, Jay Crowder's on a phenomenal contract, but they have to do a series of moves to sign Hayward. Like, trading one of these salaries would make that fewer roster transactions when it comes to renouncing guys or waiving guys or trading, like, Terry Rozier, for example.
Well, they're never going to trade Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier is the most untouchable Celtics player since Larry Bird.
You never miss an opportunity for Terry Rozier jokes.
Well, but, so...
He's a good, promising young player.
I think the Bulls are in a position where I think it would be a good idea to maybe take a flyer on one of these guys if one of them, you know, if they can get one of them. The problem is, like, there are teams, like you said, Jay Crowder's a good basketball player. It's not like, oh, they need to give up something to get somebody to take on one of these contracts. A lot of good teams want these guys because they're actually going to help them win, and so the Celtics might be able to get a pick. I feel like if they could get Crowder, and I don't know how they would because they don't have, like, stuff to give up that Boston would be interested in for Crowder, but if you get Crowder, like, even if you don't want to keep him long-term, you can flip him for another pick at the deadline, maybe.
That's true, too. I just think the Celtics are going to be more likely to just trade with that team that the Bulls might flip to next time. And again, it depends. The salary cap situation is different for every team and really important here. But when Crowder's contract is $8 million and the Celtics are trying to shed, if not $8 million, at least take on smaller salaries in return so they can shed, like, $6 or $7 million, in that regard, like, a lot of teams still have $6 or $7 million worth of cap space that they could probably absorb him into.
I think Marcus Smart is the guy that probably makes the most sense for the Celtics to maybe try to unload. And that would not be the worst guy in the world for the Bulls to look at.
I don't like the idea of Jay Crowder coming to the Bulls whatsoever. That's weird. Like, again, they need to be bad. Really bad. They need to let Paul Zipser develop. They need to let Zach LaVine develop back there. And Crowder would be taking small forward minutes. That's more Zipser, obviously, than LaVine, no doubt. But, like, still out there on the wing sometimes. Like, be bad. Do not add a player who is a central figure to a team that just led the Eastern Conference with most wins last year and was the one seed. Don't do that. Marcus Smart, I don't like him enough as a basketball player to take him, I don't think. Part of that is aesthetically. He drives me absolutely insane with his flops. Just absolutely insane. Like, it's part of the reason I'm not a huge soccer fan, because I don't like the flops, and then Marcus Smart does it to, like, the ends of the earth, you know what I mean? And look, he's a bulldog defender, one of the best defenders in the NBA. Probably should have been on an all-NBA defensive team, had a really good case there this past season, but he might make more sense, but he's not good enough offensively either, you know what I mean? Like, I want the Bulls to take more two-way players, and he still seems like more of a one-way player to me, so that's why I wouldn't do it. Love Avery Bradley, but again, love him as a basketball player.
He's too good.
He's probably too good, and the 4 years you'd get out of him, or if you assign him to an extension, like, right, he's extension eligible this season. Like, what are you doing here? You know, like, by the time you're ready to compete, Avery Bradley, look, I don't think this is a 2 or 3 year Bulls rebuild. I think it's a 5 year rebuild. I think it's probably 6 years, 5 or 6 years before Bulls fans should think, yeah, we can go to the Eastern Conference Finals. That's my opinion. Avery Bradley will be like 31 and coming off that big contract you just paid him when you're ready to make a run at the Eastern Conference Finals, in my opinion. So you just paid him for his prime years when you needed to be worse and he was making you better. So he doesn't exactly fit that to me. And look, he's probably, he's only like 26, I think.
He's 28.
Avery Bradley?
Yeah.
Is he 28?
Okay. He's older.
I'm even off. Well, that even makes more sense in my argument. I for some reason thought people were tweeting that Avery Bradley was still a little younger than people thought. But yeah, no, he's 26, man. He's going on 27. He was born in 1990.
I thought he was older for some reason.
He's 26, yeah. Avery Bradley's 26. So, like, I realize there's not a massive difference, again, between Chris Felicio being 24 and Avery Bradley, for example, being 26, and me being in on one signing and not in on a potential move for another one. But again, I just think prime years, you want to be bad. He's a developed basketball player who's really good at basketball right now and will help a team greatly. Maybe the Celtics next year, maybe he gets moved. But I think that takes care of most of what we had for today. As we mentioned before, Sean will be in Vegas soon.
I'll be there.
Watching all the Bulls basketball, open against the Mavs on Saturday, correct? The rest of the schedule is escaping the top of my head. Maybe you know it. But I'm more of a take it one game at a time in Vegas Summer League for certain.
You can't skip any steps.
Yeah, so I haven't even looked ahead to the Bulls' second game in
Magic's
Vegas.
In the work.
But if you need to look that up, Sean will be keeping you updated on the grind there all day, every day. Have a lot of good stories coming at The Athletic, too.
Yeah.
So you guys should subscribe to The Athletic because they will have great information. Of course, you can find my work at 670thescore.com. We'll keep you updated and do our best with podcast situation. Might have a guest on with Sean, might do one remotely. We like to play things by ear, so sit tight. We'll keep you updated as much as we can. But you can follow Sean on Twitter, at Hyken, myself, at Cody Westerner, and Locked On Bulls is on Twitter and Facebook by its name. Email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Send us questions, tweet us questions. Didn't get to all of them in this episode, certainly. We'll get to some more next time, but most of all, please subscribe to the podcast.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play. Wherever else you can find podcasts, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well for all your free agency needs for the NBA. And we will be back with you guys at some point soon. Probably me from Vegas, maybe with Cody, maybe not. I'll probably have a guest at some point, but we'll be back with you soon.